I feel so drawn. I'm going to have to enter into this. I'm entering into my spirit. It feels wonderful. Now, see, it's a little realistic. I'm not sure quite what some of this is asking, but it's unrealistic to expect all the manifestations. You bind them all, and then you start in, and you go down one by one. Manifestations happen when you deal with them. And so no matter what manifestation occurs, for any reason whatsoever, it's not a matter of blame. It's a matter of just getting through the thing. So when a manifestation occurs, whether the person's weak or whether he's not, whether he's in control, whether he's learned to fight against it, whether he doesn't know what's happening, whether he has a hard time, all of those things are really quite immaterial. The point is, don't willingly yield to the demonic suggestion to do wrong. That's the only point. So no matter what happens, don't worry about it and categorize it. Which category are we now, and who's responsible, and, you know, did he sin? Brother, you've been sinning. That's what you got deliverance for. So we're not trying to categorize anything. All we're trying to do is say, don't consciously give in to any demon for any reason at any time. That's all we're saying. Now, in the deliverance, when you have a manifestation, shut the thing down. Obviously, fight it. I don't mean go passive. I don't mean anything like that. All I mean is rebuke that spirit and make the spirit shut up. And then, as this brother says, by faith in the word and in authority in Jesus' name, that's what he's saying, you come against that spirit and you command him out. And when he's gone, then come against another spirit. It may manifest, whether it does or not. Come against that thing and shut him down and come against it. In other words, you don't ever want to do what they want you to do. Well, just because you try to shut him down does not mean you're going to keep them, you're going to actually be effective in shutting them down totally. It doesn't mean that because you tell them to keep quiet, they're going to necessarily do so. They'll battle you a while. You know, when Jesus cast a demon out of an epileptic, it tore the boy before it left. In the presence of Jesus, it tore him. And he threw himself in the ground. It manifested right in front of Christ. It manifested himself. And we've had cases where we could not shut a demon up. We would command him and just shut up and he'd just keep right on blabbing. Part of the problem sometimes is the individual won't get his will in motion and come to the forefront. And I'll talk about that in a moment. This is not quite as simple as some people who haven't had experience in it might think. It's a little different ball game than some people might think, because not having experience in these powers, they think, all you got to do is be strong inside. Well, you're going to someday find out that maybe you're out of control someplace, and then you'll understand better. These things are very powerful. In fact, a lot of people who, you know, may find out that they've manifested many times in your life, you didn't even know you were manifesting, you thought it was you. And they've been manifesting in, not with blasphemy and things like that, but in bad attitudes towards people. Ugliness, uncharitableness, you know, hardness, criticalness, accusing, you know, all kinds of stubbornness, you know, things like this. That is manifestations. That's what it is. Manifestations are going on all the time by Christians throughout the whole Christian world. They just don't know it's demons. Because they're not shutting them down. So it isn't like, you know, you can be perfect in shutting them down. We've had some real stubborn ones. We have said, you keep quiet, you shut up, and he just go on and on and on. We've had other cases where we've tried to get him to talk, and they won't say a word. They just clam right up. One of them talked his head off. We tried to shut him down, and then we finally got him shut down, wanted to know something, he wouldn't say a peep, you know. And we've had others that took the person to talk, and they could hardly talk. They could say, Jesus, and we rebuked somebody, and they could hardly, these powers can be very powerful. Even one man made him quit hearing, so he couldn't even hear us when we were talking to him. So we're dealing with very powerful forces, but you need to keep on. So it isn't like you have failed if they don't shut up immediately when you say so. We have to really come against it and keep coming. As you keep coming, you begin to get, and keep praying, you begin to gain power over them. And as God sends more angels to your rescue and you keep on beseeching God, they'll begin weakening and weakening. So you're going to have a certain amount of manifestations that you don't want. And it's going to run the whole gamut from the person not knowing how to, you know, shut him down. He's so far in the back room that he's hearing the deliverance happening out here. We've had these cases. I just felt like I was
way back in a room someplace, and all this was happening out in front of me, and like I wasn't even doing it. It's all happened, and I could, you know, and finally I could hear a person call my name, just barely. I just barely could hear my name being called, saying, Fred, Fred, fight it, fight it. And I didn't know how to do it. It was so powerful. It was like they had all control over me, and finally I began to try. And I began to say, Jesus, help, Jesus. And the more I did it, nothing began to weaken. And the more I did, I began to feel myself come to the forefront. See? And you have to get that person will involved. It isn't a matter of clear cut, feel fine, demon's not on me, okay, demon, do it or not. It's not that clear. Just like when you've yielded to something a lot, and it's on you heavy, and you feel hopelessness or something like this, it isn't just so easy to say, well, throw it off, brother. Make a decision, throw it off. I can't. It's hopeless. See? Hopelessness. Unbelief. Stand in the wood. I don't know if the wood's true. It's unbelief is there. It's not easy. But you fight it with all that you've got. I often discern the demonic thoughts, feelings, speech, or muscle control before outward manifestation occurs. And you know, that is... Well, a lot of deliverance leaders should be able to do that. You don't have to wait till things completely occur before you discern it. If you're watching carefully, if you're a discerning person, you should be able to see that person begin to, you know, stiffen up, and his eyes begin to glaze, and a power begin to come over his mouth, and you can see little things happening and twitching, and various things begin happening. If you're discerning, you know, like a physician is supposed to be, and look at the signs and symptoms, you don't have to wait till the full blown thing is there, And so that's good to understand this. And I prompt the delivery, and we've taught this all before, I'm bringing it again to your remembrance, we prompt delivery to interrupt and describe what is happening or being said inside, and then proceed with the deliverance. We have taught stay in contact with your delivery, and instead of letting the thing rage out of control and him in the background, keep him up the forefront, let him be telling you what's happening. I'm beginning to feel now this. He should be told, you keep me informed what you're feeling inside and what's happening and how you're thinking. And if you keep good control with him, you'll have a much faster and easier deliverance. A lot of people waste hours of time because they're out of control out of contact. And if you keep in contact, they know how to effectively work. You cannot, friends, let me say this. You cannot always expect. It is wrong to expect. Deliverance leaders all walk in, as though they have the Urim and the Thummim, and they know all and see all and deliver. There's a wrong concept of deliverance leaders know all, see all. And anything they see to discern, they should understand it's their responsibility to find your demon. No way. You've been living with yourself a long time now. It should be a lot easier for you to find it than for them to find it. They can find what they see, and they've seen some things. But they can't find everything that's hidden in there. You should know better than they. You cannot expect God to get perfect discernment in everything. Our discernment should basically come because of a problem in our life. And I will give you some hints right now. There are deliverance leaders who are suggesting all kinds of things that God didn't give them. They're using the noggin. If that's there, this is probably there. They're using imagination. They're making assumptions. They're guessing right and they're guessing wrong. It isn't all clear cut. This is it, all perfectly done. And your deliverance leaders don't need to think that you have been betrayed, shot down, and undermined when I say that. You should never have to come on as the prophet of God who knoweth all. We prophesy in part, and we perceive and have word of knowledge in part and understand in part, and we won't always be right. And even the demon may even mislead us. We might even get thoughts into our own mind that says you get a spirit of when you don't. We cannot be perfect in these things. But the person themselves knows, should know, if he's doing a good job in analyzing. When you come to deliverance session, you should have analyzed your life and have written down what your problems are so you don't make everybody guess and not know and can't think of a thing. A lot of times you come with 8 things in your mind, you lay down, you can't think of one thing. That demon blocks your mind entirely. So while you can think, write it down. So you've got a list, you can read it. So what's your problem? Oh, boy, I had a whole list of them. But if you got them in you can read, and then he can read. And you should come prepared, stay in contact, And that is what you basically know. They can discern some things. They may not be right in them all. But if they're not right in them, don't worry about it. You just fight them anyway. Just, you know, don't, we don't want to waste time. But if he thinks it might be, though, let him fight it. Let him come against it, you know, in case it may be. Now, but we can discern, you know, with actions oftentimes. Now, actual revelation of the name of the demon is what I understand as the word of knowledge. Is this an error? Well, word of knowledge is a word that you speak in which you have a supernatural knowledge and a flash revelation you didn't have before. And that can involve the name of the demon, the nature of the thing, but not the name, how he's been acting, what he's been doing. It can involve any of those things. But nobody is going to be able to have perfect word of knowledge for everything. When I find a deliverance leader that knows all about everybody, has all the lists, knows everything about everybody, I know he's way out on a limb doing lots of guessing and assuming. Has there been teaching given about the practice of shouting at the demons, which is often mistaken for power and anointing? Yes, I have mentioned this in the past. Demons are neither deaf nor are they intimidated by loud tones. It's the authority that you know that you have, that you come again with the insistence or on the grounds. Now, many times the deliverance leader is thwarted because the deliverer has not made commitment. And so the deliverance leader is saying, you have no right to be healed. And he's wrong. He's wrong. That demon has right, and he's going to stay there until that deliverer finally comes to grip with his problem and gets willing. He's willing to be free of it, but he's not willing to fight it nor say no to it when it comes on him. Therefore, he comes and wants somebody else to do it for him, and somebody else cannot do it for him, and you're going to have a long deliverance session until that person finally gets around somewhere to becoming willing to say, finally say yes. And when you have these 11-hour deliverance sessions, oftentimes and usually is the fault of the deliverer who has not come to grips with this problem in his life in an appropriate way. And it's better to have it than not, but you wear people out. They can come a lot faster. When people come all committed, all prayed up, all decided, ready to go and cooperate, things click, generally speaking. I was ministered deliverance after my first meeting at Community Chapel because I didn't understand much, and because I wanted reality, I made myself completely passive. I was determined to resist, to neither cause nor prevent anything from happening to me. As a result, deliverance was lengthy, rigorous, and noisy. But I was convinced, and certainly I was freed from certain things. Subsequent deliverances have been quicker and included such manifestations as yawning, coughing, pressure in the chest, and occasional clenched fists, and so forth. However, because of teaching and experience, I can now fight actively against demons before they become outwardly obnoxious, which is good. And so you don't want to make yourself passive. You've got to fight. This is a war, brother. Does it or does it matter, or not matter who leads the deliverance and so forth? It matters the same way that it matters who preaches the sermon and who witnesses. Some are more effective than others. But anybody with truth can preach or testify or practice deliverance and get results. Not as easy as somebody who's more skilled, but they still can do it. Some of you are hindered because your deliverance people are working with you are not as skilled as some other people. They don't know how to probe, get in there, how to deal with you, tell you the conduct. They don't understand everything as well. They're not as forceful, and they don't get as good a result sometimes. But, you know, everybody can have the same person, and we do what we can. That's why it's good sometimes, if you're not getting deliverance, to try different ones. Get different friends to do it. And as I said before, don't just yell and say, get out, get out, get out, get out, get out. It isn't repetition that drives them out. And if you're not getting results, you need to communicate. Brother, have you taken a stand against this thing? What's happening in your life with this? Are you really prepared to give this thing up no matter what happens? Sometimes you have to deal with the person and bring them to a place of willingness so you can go on with the deliverance. Otherwise, you're wasting a lot of time. Now, I don't quite understand this because I just got through talking, asking this, I thought, unless this wasn't written before I answered it. Could you say something, but I'm going to answer it anyway for what it says beyond here. Could you say something, if there's time, about the limits of manifestations that should be allowed? Should anything be allowed to take place as long as the person seems to be out of control? If the person's out of control, it's not a matter of allowing it. He's out of control. And as far as allowing it, you should not allow any manifestation of any sort for any reason. No matter what this is, if it's a coughing fit, but you shouldn't allow it. You shouldn't allow anyone to do anything. If it's fist clenching up, keeps clenching and nursing, you shouldn't allow it. You shouldn't allow any manifestation. You don't want the demons to manifest. Because demon manifestation is demons having their own way. Now, it might be a tip-off for you that they manifested. It might help you know why it was there and get rid of it. But don't let it keep manifesting. All you need to know is he's there. And you may not be able to stop him. That thing may clench up and keep doing this no matter what you do. So if it's a physical thing and he's doing it no matter what you do, then you ignore that and go on fighting the demons. Also comment on if a person says they were out of control, how do we know that's true? And they weren't really yielding to demonic suggestion. We don't. You don't always know it's true. They don't always know it's true themselves. They think it's quite subtle sometimes. That pressure comes on people, and they cannot discern between what they do and the demon is doing. You can't always know. If they can't always know, you certainly can't always know. If they're out of control, they are not guilty of sin and cannot be held responsible for whatever they say or do, whether a tempting position to take, you know. If you know what I mean. Sure, it's tempting, perhaps, for people to say, well, I was out of control and I couldn't do anything about it. Just self-justification. But it really doesn't make any difference. Once you're delivered of the thing, you're jumping all over the place with joy. The mistakes you made in the deliverance are only a certain percentage added, only PSs to what you've been doing, you know, all the life before anyway with this. So it's not that we're trying to say, well, it's not important that you didn't sin during deliverance by letting the demon, by sin I mean disobedience to God. Out of ignorance or not being careful, we should always stop the demons whenever we can and not worry about trying to place blame. Once we understand the principle, we just go with it. Okay, now for this, what I want to bring. Our position early in deliverance has been not to seek manifestations, but to not worry about them either. And that is true. As far as things occurring that you cannot prevent. Now, we may have let manifestations go on that should not have been because the person was not trying to shut them down. And if it's so, that was an error. We have held that no one would judge, belittle, or criticize the one receiving deliverance because, after all, the manifestations were the demons, not the person, or from their own heart. Now, see, that is partially true, as sometimes true and sometimes not true. In other words, if the demon is doing something that you did not consciously yield to, then it is the demon doing it and not you, and you're not responsible. If, however, he tells you to do something wrong and you just won't fight it, but you give in and do it, then you are responsible. And the manifestations are not just the demons, but they're the demons and you. He's manifesting through you at your permission. There's a difference in him manifesting through you without your permission and manifesting through you with your permission. We have encouraged them to not feel embarrassed or guilty if the demons manifest through them during deliverance. We should encourage people not to feel guilty or embarrassed if they manifest, even if they yielded to them. You know, I mean, just because we are caught in a trap and weak in areas and couldn't bring ourselves to bear and so forth against them, we should do our utmost not to be embarrassed. That doesn't help to be embarrassed. And it helps to know that we're not alone in this. That lots of people will have the same experience, and lots of people who are strong Christians have it, and in some areas. And so we should always try to keep not to be embarrassed as much as possible. And tell yourself that, too. You say, well, I can't help but be embarrassed. Well, do you know we are embarrassed by the sins we do sometimes? We are embarrassed. And we're embarrassed by the mistakes we've made. I've had demons fight me in my speech, and I have been terribly embarrassed. I have taken a word at home. Let's say the Greek word synagoge, which means synagogue. No, and of course this isn't a good example because I know that word, but synagoge. Some word I'm not really too familiar with. And maybe it's hard for me to say it right. Synagoge. I come up here and I'm on my way to bring it. And as I'm coming along the line, a demon of panic seizes a hold of me, and I begin to fight it. I begin to say, now, we'll take it slow. Syllable by syllable, and I've even marked it on here so I can do it. And as I approach it, a power is building, a pressure is building on me. And I get right about to it, and the spirit comes on me and says, sit quick. just like that. And then that thing that turns numbers around, it flips it around, and I blumble it all up. Can't say it, you know. And it's been highly embarrassing. But you know, being humans and not God, we do embarrass ourselves before one another in our actions, our words, the things we say. And we're just going to have to be humble enough and fight the demons of pride to be able to still face one another. People that, you know, blow something and then won't face anybody are just yielding to further demonic suggestion. We've got to stand up again, do it again. You know, we hurt each other, we do things, we're embarrassed at what we do, but we have to face each other. This is part of the Christian experience that we have to have in life. Our concern is that now people are going to feel betrayed, misled, condemned, humiliated, and so forth. In fact, some have already expressed this. Some who have testified about the deliverances feel now they are publicly exposed and have sinned by having manifestations. My friend, as Jesus said, you're clean, but not all. And I know this is a little twisting of the context, but we may go against doing a deliverance. We may have to go back and say, well, some things happened that I could not control. Well, in that, we have not disobeyed God. But some things may have happened we could have controlled. We have to say, well, I just didn't know better at that time. I just didn't have the power in my life to do it. I wasn't able to bring it. The emotions were so strong on me. I just wasn't able to handle it, but somehow didn't. I should have been, but I didn't. And we just have to go up and go on. We cannot allow the demons to then bring us into the slough of despair. If we're not careful, demons will prevent us from having deliverances because of pride and these other shame, demons of shame and embarrassment. If you've got demons of shame and embarrassment, you've got to fight them. It'll be all the more hard for you people and it will for others. Others get up here and tell things that, you know, you would, some of you think they would, you know, how can they tell that? And they have no problem with it. But they don't have a demon of embarrassment, obviously. And so these spirits are very powerful sometimes. And when they're out there on you, sometimes it takes more than a human effort sometimes to be able to bring yourself up and be able to fight against that power. But you see, it isn't the only time that you've disobeyed God. You've been doing it down the line from time to time with that spirit, and just because it does it again, I mean, at least you're trying to fight it. At least, you know, you're doing, hopefully, the best you can. If we don't do the best we can, well, that's part of our weakness, you know? This is what we have to do. But the results thereof is wonderful when we get released. And that's what counts. That's what counts. We're not blaming one another. I'm not blaming anybody for whatever you do. We're not blaming. This isn't a blaming session. Jesus said, I come not to condemn, but to save the world. So we're not here saying, well, he should not, you know. We're trying to train for effectiveness and to follow the word and shut the devil down, but we're not trying to blame anybody. Another comment was, it is just as much sin to yield to demons in private as in public. Yes, I said that, and that's true. And I'm not going to throw that away. How can I throw that away? Thus, some timid sweetie who would never be found exhibiting anger, hate, uncleanness, bitterness, and so forth, but who somehow had picked up such a demon and had it manifested during a deliverance session is seemingly being judged as guilty if she has yielded to those spirits openly in her life. For some, this spoils their testimony and opens them to great remorse, fear, or confusion. Our concern is, too, that many will now fear to even go to deliverance, lest they end up manifesting and thus sinning. We should say end up with demons manifesting. And if they don't go, they won't manifest, and therefore they are safe from exposure, ridicule, and embarrassment. And I think the person has a legitimate concern of people maybe being out of balance and doing this. But it doesn't help to be out of balance and keep your demons and do this. And see, people do overreact because of spirits. Because of spirits of overreaction, we do overreact oftentimes. And these things do happen. The same thing happened in Pentecost. Brother Seymour said, we try to study the ark too much. He says, people all freeze up. We've had the same experience here. But then, what's the solution? Don't study the ark so much. That means you have to put up with all kinds of demonic things, and hay and flesh and wildfire, and that's not good either. And so you have the terrible difficulty of being a pastor as this excess or this excess. See, you got your choice of two bad situations. Well, all you can do is do the best, try your best to teach, to prevail on the people and plead with them and beg them to get delivered and fight demons that try to say, oh, well, if he thinks that about me, and now I'm embarrassed, now everything is shot. My friend, it isn't that way. Nobody, see, everybody's got so many problems of their own. They don't have time to be picking you out of the crowd and judging you. I mean, we're all in the same great big boat, and we all need deliverance. And I think most of us are doing pretty well at not judging anybody else. And I haven't been seeing a lot of judgment going on. And hopefully after my lesson today, it'll clear up the problem that may have been there after my lesson last time. Because, you know, in 1 hour you only can say so much. I was bringing a certain point because I saw a certain imbalance, and I wasn't trying to teach the whole spectrum of deliverance. You know, you can't bring every qualification to is any one time you do anything. I was trying to hit one point so you could see it, and it was a very valuable, important point. We cannot throw away this principle of the Word of God, say, because of any other reason. Now, as far as being guilty, let me explain something about being guilty. I think some people maybe misunderstand the word guilty. We can be guilty of yielding to, well, they'll think I'm guilty of yielding to the Spirit, and I shouldn't have. And if it was one that you couldn't help, you won't think that. See, but what if it was I could help and I yielded? Was I guilty? Yeah. But that's not guilty. Head off. Fall out. Guilty, but nobody's going to judge you. You're guilty, but we're not going to judge you. We're guilty too. We're going to love you. We're not going to worry about whether you're guilty. All guilty means, yes, you did it. It doesn't mean you're condemned, rejected, bad, evil. It doesn't mean any of those things. All it means is you did it. See? That's all it means. I may be guilty today. You know, I may be, you know, guilty in not fully qualifying myself. I may be guilty in getting a little too, you know, this. But that doesn't mean I'm wiped out. See? So we need to not get too worried about that word, you know, guilty. See, church is not a group of perfect people. It's people, they're blood-washed sinners, saved by the grace of God, that are on the way to heaven in different positions, and in the family we put up with the widow ones and the little bigger ones, and we understand that, you know, little Samothy can't do what bigger Clarence can do. We understand that. We don't expect little Samothy to do as well. See, she's not going to be able to do as well. She has to eat a little bit early for dinner. See, she can't handle waiting. See, well, how come Samothy gets a graham cracker and I don't? Because you're 5 and she's 2. Oh. Can't think enough to be unhappy with that answer, see. But there are reasons. Are all degrees of manifestation sin? No. It just means you're out of control. If you could control it and you don't. It's not necessarily disobedience to God unless you willingly do it. There are some things that you could control if you could put all your reasoning together and fight it hard. Let me give an example. This demon power is on you so hard, heavily, and it's manifesting itself in a very physical way. Let's say it's a demon of pout, and it's pouting and pouting and pouting out there. And you're way back, and you feel totally out of touch with this demon. And you just kind of, you're kind of watching this demon pout, so to speak, in the back of your mind, and so to speak, and it's doing this, and you feel like you're in a room way away from it, it's pouting away. Now, but you're not trying to let it pout. It didn't say pout, it's okay, I'm going to pout. You're not yielding, you're not disobeying in an action. You're just a little sleepy and not really realizing that I can fight this thing. I mean, you're just kind of groggy. And so you may be guilty and you may be out of control and it's in control, but it doesn't mean you necessarily have sinned because you haven't assented to it. You just haven't gathered up the thing to be wake up and do something about it. That's what the Lord sometimes, he says, awake thou that sleepest. Because the church doesn't know what it's doing in some areas. But what about feeling the emotions of anger or bitterness if a person doesn't speak it out somehow? Isn't sin in your heart the same as committing it? Well, it's not sin in your heart to feel anger if you don't yield to it and give in to it. Demons of anger will manifest anger in there. And you will feel angry. But when you feel angry, now it depends on what you say. I won't allow that spirit of anger. I will not give it out. I do not equate with it. I will not have it. Or if we say, you know, I am going to yield to this thing, and I'm going to let him have it, I'll say, then you have sinned in your heart. You have. But not if you just feel it. How about facial distortions? It depends on whether facial distortions come as a result where the demon has come on you and you're out of control, or whether you've yielded to the spirit and it's distorting your face because you are going to give in to it and let your face distort. It depends on. It's only a manifestation of what's happening inside in either case. And it may or may not be at your volition. It's the case of a pouty spirit that may be the way it manifests. If feeling the emotion is a manifestation and thus sin, but that's not true. Feeling emotion is not a manifestation. Manifestation, it is in a in a manner of speaking. It is making it manifest and made visible. It's making itself visible enough inside that you should be able to detect it. And if it does that, it's not sin in you. It's just manifesting its presence. But then if you yield to it willingly and let it make itself visible out through your actions or words, then that manifestation is sin because you have disobeyed God in allowing it. But if it bursts out and has control over you and it's got you under control at this moment, then you have not sinned because you have not yielded to it or allowed it willingly. Now, it may be because of past sins that you're out of control. That may be true. And that often happens, that a person cannot control himself. Demons have their way freely because of past sins. Not that you're sinning now, but your past sins have allowed it to get so strong that you cannot control yourself. And that happens. You do things without even thinking about it or knowing about it. You didn't even realize you were going to do it. It just happened. You were surprised yourself. That's because of past sins. It didn't do any good to categorize past sins, present sins, now which much sins. We're not calculating sins, see? But we're just trying to do right. How does a person separate the temptation, not sin, from the manifestation, which is sin? You separate it by whether or not you purposely allow it or whether you don't. Access of demons. If demons tempt and attack only from within, which is where they attack from, then Jesus had hundreds of demons. That's right, in him. That is true. He had thousands tempting within him. He was tempted in all points, as we are, and he had them tempting right from within. And it caused him a great deal of pressure. Put a lot of pressure on him. But how did they get in if he never opened any doors to them in his life? Now, see, I answered this question last week, but somehow it got missed. So let me read a bit more, then I'll answer it again. If they can enter at will with no provocation on our part, then what incentive is there to avoid opening the doors? They can enter at will with no provocation, and there's great incentive in not opening the doors. I'll explain that in a minute. And wouldn't it seem futile to even get delivered because they are free to return whenever they desire? No, absolutely not. If after deliverance there's any pull to that thing again, even though not powerfully or as consistently or automatically as before deliverance, does that mean the person did not actually get delivered? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Or that they cannot come back in. That's not the issue. Now, I said last week, there's been a use of a term in which there's a lot of misunderstanding. And that's what the problem has been. The person who's writing this has got a misunderstanding because of the term that was used. You know, we have a lot of things like, a lot of terms we use like, you know, I gave him my heart. Well, you know, well, we don't really give him a heart, you know. But some people can misunderstand some things. The point isn't that you can keep the demon out from in your mind tempting you. Or Jesus, he would never have been tempted. He doesn't say, may I have permission to come in and tempt you? Before you know it, he has energized your brain with the temptation without you ever knowing he's going to do it. It's right there that fast. And he's tempting from within. You cannot keep him out. He can come in and tempt anytime he wants. But the point is, as you yield yourself to that temptation, that spirit gains greater and greater power over you. Until eventually, he has such power over you because you've yielded yourself to him. And it's the same thing in the counterpart as when you yield yourself to the Lord. Don't you know that the more we yield ourselves to the Lord, the more power we have with God? And the more he can use us? A person who's yielded himself very consistently for 50 years to the Lord and, has gifts of the Spirit, God can just speak to him and he's quick to get the voice. God can move him easily and he can receive and know. It's the same thing in the demonic world. When you have given yourself constantly to the demon, when it is yielded over and over and over, he can move you quickly, he can make suggestions, you move quickly at it, you give yourself easily to it. It's the same type of thing. And so when this demon takes control over you and has control over your mind in this area, until you feel like, I just cannot fight this thing. I mean, it's just like it's a terrific, I cannot get hardly get my will in motion. Do you know why? Do you know why? Rebellious? No. Stubborn? No. Unwilling? No. Because you have given him your will. You have said, not my will, but thy will be done. Smoking demon, I've given into you and into you and into you and into you. Every time you come, I've given into your will, until I am a perfect doulos, servant of you. I speak only that which the demon gives me to speak. Until we are practically one in this area. And that is why it's so difficult to get your will against something, because we've given ourselves over. Now, something that comes that you said no, no, no a lot of times, you haven't given your will that much. And it's still easy to fight him. Those are the kind you can come and have an easy deliverance and say nothing doing. But these ones you've given yourself over and you can hardly get your will in motion, those ones you're going to have to come sometimes and have a real prayer vigil, you cannot handle these things in the 15 minute and a half hour session. Some of these things might take an all day session. They might. These things in the 15 minute and a half hour session. Some of these things might take an all day session. They'll take real work because you have given yourself over. And when that happens, these spirits, instead of you being the third one on the block that he comes to, you may be one that he comes and resides in you. And they do this in Christians at times into parts of the bodies. And there are people who become Christians, I'm talking about, who love Jesus, spirit-filled, and we've had a witness with many of them, have come and taken up a residence, apparently, that we feel in a certain part of the body. For example, a person with lust, when he goes to lust, he'll feel burning in his eyes. His eyeballs will burn with fire until he has to squint them hard, and he feels that thing right in here until it goes. Some people with homosexual demons, they say that they feel it in the fingers, that demon's in the finger. They can feel the thing in the finger, and they feel it, and it leaves the finger. And with anger, they feel it in the pit of the stomach. And they say, it's gone, they feel it leave. I know, just where it lives in the body. And that thing, it takes up a residence someplace in the body, and it isn't always tempting the mind. It's in there, waiting for an opportunity, and then, boom, it energizes the mind. Now, I'm going to ask a question. How many of you, being Christians, after you've been Christians, after being spirit-filled Christians, have had a demon that you knew which part of the body was in and was there until it got delivered and you knew when it left it? Would you raise your hand so we, see, quite a good number. Thank you. Just wanted to help verify what I'm saying here. Now, that isn't the point, however. That isn't the point. The point isn't whether they're in the finger or the eye or that they're there. It isn't. The point is they have started to stay there because they have such frequent access to you. They do not like to be out in the air. They want to be in creatures. And so they do want to reside in a creature, Christian or otherwise. And when you're given enough, they will decide to stick with you, as opposed to flitting around. But they may leave you at times, even then. They may leave you. Now, the point is this, then. It's whether we yield to the Spirit or not. I said in my last session that these demons did Jesus no harm. These demons that were in his mind did him no harm. They weren't lodging in him. Didn't pay to lodge in him. He wouldn't give them any food.
Right.
Any fun.
Right.
So they left him for a more opportune season.
Yes.
But those of us who give him fun in certain areas, they may lodge there. But that's still not the point. The point is when they energize the mind.
Yes.
That is the point.
Yes.
And they can come in whether lodging there or not. They just like to be in a being. They don't like to be outside in the air. And if they can't find a being, they may find an object which is something that they can relate to, something that's been used in witchcraft or sorcery, and then they'll be in that object if they can't be in the individual, but they'd rather be in an individual, or even be in an animal, but they'd rather be in an individual. They do not want to be without a body to manifest itself in. Now, when they energize your mind, then the battle is on, and that's the point you make your decision. Those demons that came and battled his mind from within did not hurt him.
Right.
Even if they came and attacked certain organs, sex organs, along with the brain, they didn't hurt him because he did not give in. Now, I'm not saying, oh, it's lovely to have demons in you as long as they're not manifesting. I didn't say it's lovely.
Right.
I said they're not hurting you. And it's true. They're not. They're not until they energize you and you yield to it. How can they hurt you? They're not doing anything. They're not always doing something in you. You're not letting them. And they can't just mow you down. God only lets them do so much, depending on how much you yield to them. The less you yield to them, the less he'll let them push you. These demons would fight you all day, every minute, if you allow them to. God's not going to allow them unless you're giving in to them. If you got a demon of fantasy on you, and you keep fantasizing and fantasizing and fantasizing, they can pester you to death. But if you'd only occasionally let them fantasize, they cannot just fantasize for weeks on end in you.
Right.
God won't let them. He won't let them attack you that much because you're not giving in that much. The percentage of time that you're being battled is often related to the percentage of time you're giving in. Not on a strict basis. Now, the point is breaking the control of the demon over you. Will in any particular area. That's the point. So if you get deliverance and you break the power that demon offer you, that demon may come back in and gain access anytime he wants without your permission to tempt you again for a few little bit to see if you'll get in. But if you don't, he's going to go someplace else. His managers will tell him, get out of there. You can't do anything. Go someplace else. I got a person over here that's more important. Or if he doesn't have anybody and he lays, what if he stays there and he just stays dormant a while? He's not hurting you.
Right.
I don't like him, though. I don't blame you, but he's not hurting you. He's not hurting you just because you got no place else to go. He's not hurting you unless you're giving him something, unless you're giving in to him. See? You may have a demon of cancer in you or a demon of some other disease. He's only hurting you in the disease area. And this thing only hurts you in the area of whatever that temptation is. Now, if you break the power, so you get your own will back, then it's much easier. Then when they come in, they don't have you all hypnotized. They can't just snap their fingers and have you do it. They can't just energize you and boom, you'll follow this. Because you get that up and say, nothing doing, I know better than you. You've lost that thing, that propensity that he's made you have, and the power's broken, so it's great incentive to get delivered. Whether he's in there or not is beside the point. It's great. Whether he always tempts them out here or always tempts them in here is entirely immaterial to the thesis that I'm bringing. of breaking his power over you through deliverance. So it's not a question is whether they're in. See, demons aren't spirits. I mean, demons are spirits. And whether they're in or pass through or whatever is not the point. It's when they're working on you. Now, let me get to the next point. To those looking for such loopholes, wouldn't this tend to convince them it is irrelevant whether they avoid movies, TV, homing devices, and so forth? Well, first let me say that people looking for loopholes always get into trouble. Because if those demons want to tempt them in those areas, they are free to enter and do so anyway. They're not free to tempt you if you're not yielding to them on a consistent basis. God won't let them. He only lets them when they say, don't we have proper rights to this person? He's giving himself. And I says, yeah, you do. But if he says, he never gives himself, don't we have rights? God says, no, you don't. You leave him alone. He says, well, can I occasionally tempt him? God says, yes, you may occasionally tempt him. God sets the limit. Remember when Job came to Job? He had to get permission from God. God told him how far to go and how much. God sets the limits. Couldn't some go into despair that they had no way of keeping demons from entering, regardless of how careful they are to avoid opening the doors to them? He said, you can't keep demons out. You can only keep them ineffective. True. Why go into despair if the demons are ineffective in you? No reason to have a despair. Jesus was in despair and they were ineffective in him. So ineffective, they're ineffective. Ineffective means doing nothing or doing little. That's not room for despair. Despair is when you're giving in to them and you can't seem to stop them. Discernment. If manifestations are yielding to demons and thus sin, as the people who don't want sin, we will probably be trying to eliminate or at least suppress manifestations from now on. You should always suppress manifestations whenever you can. In this case, if something is called out by a deliverance leader, should it be presumed that it is there and that the leader has accurate discernment? No, you cannot presuppose the leader has accurate discernment. You can only presuppose that he may have accurate discernment. And if he may have, you might as well act on it. It doesn't cost an awful lot. A little bit of time and energy. The point isn't whether he's in or out. The point is whether he's got you under control or whether you're controlling your own life. Whether he's got power over you or whether he doesn't. Whether he's effective in you or whether he's ineffective. Don't make in or out the object. That is not the important thing. How long should they continue to come against the thing? Until you see it is broken in your life. You said that one advantage of manifestations is for the team to know whether that demon is there or when it goes. That is true. But that the reason was not sufficient to warrant the person yielding to demons. That is true. You should never yield to a demon, regardless for any reason, whether it helps you to know or not know. But you can ask him, you can require him to identify himself that you might know if you don't know. But if you know, don't ask him to speak up and start blabbing. Only ask him to talk if you can't seem to get delivered and you know what the thing and you don't know what it is and you need help. Then make him tell on himself. That shames him and hurts him. That's why the underground's must. They don't want to tell on themselves unless they have to. Sometimes God's grace comes down and makes him tell on himself, and you haven't asked him and the deliverance leader hasn't asked him. God says, this poor soul does not know the problem. You demon, I'm going to require you because that person has come to get delivered and they want delivered and don't know what to get delivered for. They don't know who you are. You're too sly for them. They're not that smart. And they are my son and I love them. And I want them freed. You tell who you are. And they obey. But you haven't done anything about it. Likewise, it would stand to reason that the team should not pray for the Lord to stir up that demon or command it to reveal itself by manifesting its nature or working. That's false. It stands to reason that when we need that demon to identify himself, that the Lord say, Lord, you make that thing identify himself. Stir him up. He won't always talk. He may act. He may act. It may be a spirit of nervousness that you don't even know is there, even though you're nervous all the time. And all of a sudden you get, the Lord makes, you're nervous? You're so nervous? No, what time is it? No, you're nervous, everything's nervous person. And if you're smart, you say, what are you feeling? I am. Well, I'm just nervous. He says, "Ah, but why are you nervous? You're lying here relaxed. We're your friends. The Lord loves you. You're going to get delivered. There's no problem. Why? I just feel so nervous about that. I just feel, you feel nervous because you're giving into a spirit of nervousness. Now you do not. You relax and come against that spirit of nervousness. We're going to pray that the Lord will give you angels of relaxation and bring His peace and comfort to you. You're a son of God. You have no reason to be nervous. Now come against that spirit and say, 'I rebuke you, spirit of nervousness. I have no part with you. I've yielded to you and you have tricked me. And I have been so nervous that I eat too fast and I get gas and burp and I'm about torn to pieces with the workload I'm going to do. And I'm so nervous because of what people are going to say about me. And I'm so nervous what I look like and I'm nervous about my weight and I'm nervous about everything. And you have tricked me. But now that I know it's you, I'm going to shut off that nervousness. I'm not going to be nervous. I'm going to..." And see, you go on this way, and that's how you handle these things. So unless the demon reveals his name, there would be no other indication of what spirit is being dealt with or whether one named is there. And that's false. Because one, any actions that person feels is indicative. Two, his life history is indicative. So there's all kinds of indications besides the name. You generally don't need the name. You generally know what you're dealing with. But sometimes you know your problems, but all of a sudden there's a certain manifestation which is not clear enough as to its nature that you might not know which one it is. And that's the case you usually have to say, "Which one are you?" Because you're not feeling nervous or this or that. It's something else, you know, and you're not quite sure what it is. Maybe you can't make it, you feel an ugly thing and it's riling up and you're not quite sure what it's doing to you. And you don't know who to attack. And you say, "Lord, give me discernment on this thing. Who is this thing? What is this thing we're dealing with? Demon, who are you?" See, that's what you need to do. That's why I went over, in case in Greece I told you about, I went over that spirit and began to demand. He told me, "Okay, we weren't getting effect. We didn't know who it was in there. We did not know it was this Mariology demon, you know, and this Greek Catholic demon. We didn't know what it was, so we didn't know how to act." A person, if you totally don't know what to do and you're not getting any wisdom and any revelation and you totally don't know, what do you do? "Satan, in the name of Jesus, whatever demons you got in there, and whatever demons you are, you demons, I command you out." And the Bible, you know, we have catch-all, you know, "Rebuke the devil and he will flee." That doesn't mean he's there. It means his cohorts are there. He speaks just like he does when he says, Hitler invaded Holland. Hitler never went into Holland, but his troops did. And that's Hitler invading Holland. And the devil is on you. He's not there, but his troops are, and that's the devil on you. And you can come against the devil. Many cases you don't even know, and God still wipes them out. But some have a particular strength and ability to hang on because we've yielded so much, and they don't get wiped away so easy. Now, a little more time, if you will. I won't get to my message, I can see that, but that's all right. A person may have been experiencing a problem, that is a marriage problem, but doesn't know specifically what is their problem or what is their mate, and does not know what spirit is causing the problem because it doesn't have a clear-cut pattern but seems to affect various areas in subtle ways. If they were just start praying through all the possibilities, and they shouldn't start just doing that, unless they have nothing else they can do, they should really know. They should know what areas they got in their life. They should come to get one at a time. Against every area they got in their life, it's a problem. But we're not to be looking for facial or bodily indications that the thing is reacting. No, we should be looking for facial reactions, body reactions, every type of reactions. It isn't that, because we're talking about don't allow them to manifest. We mean willingly yielding to them. We don't mean that if they're reacting automatically, we don't mean you should stop that. We don't mean that if they're doing it without your presence and it's there, the fact that you see that, the fact that you have prayed that they would manifest themselves, not by telling somebody to sin and then they yield into sin and blaspheme and tell people Bibles up, not that kind of thing. That isn't what you're asking. You're not saying, make him sin, Lord. Lord, make that demon sin through, make that person sin. That is not what we're asking. But just to identify his nature, make that demon come out of hiding. He may make you nervous, but you've been nervous. And now he's showing who he is. As soon as he shows that, you don't say, "Thank you, Lord, keep him nervous now during this whole time." You quit making him nervous. Now we know who you are. Now you get out. So we're not afraid of making him identify through actions in the body, but don't think it's a glory to have him continue it. Because you say continue it until he's gone, you won't get gone, usually. It would be hard to know what to zero in on. And once the spirit is being prayed against, should they pray 3 hours, 5 hours, 3 minutes, and hope for the best? If the thing keeps throwing itself up, you pray until it quits, and if it finally is forced, and I thank the Lord he's making him do this oftentimes, scream and leave, and then you quit then. Or if the person feels it's gone, which they often do, then you quit then. You quit when you feel like you've made a real stand against it and the person is committed. Now, if he's not committed and he can't hold up and he comes back again, well, okay, we're going to have to go at it longer this time. You're going to have to really commit yourself. And you need to talk to him about his life outside of deliverance. That's what's probably been neglected too much. Letting him live sloppy and come back and give him more deliverance and waste time instead of saying, are you coming to grips against his sin? What happens when it comes upon you? Give me a last example. It came on you. Did you go immediately to prayer? You didn't. Why didn't you? Well, what did you do? Did you call on God and ask? No, you didn't. You just gave right into it. Well, why? Well, I wanted to. Well, we can't get deliverance that way, brother. If you want deliverance, you have to shut it down. See, we need to bring them to a place of willingness. That will speed up the deliverances. Then you get a lot more done. People are going to be reluctant to have anyone pray too long because you said an 11-hour deliverance is an ugly deliverance. Now, let's be honest with ourselves. Isn't 11 hours an ugly deliverance? It's not a sweet deliverance. But sometimes it's necessary, same as an ugly surgery. Don't you know surgeries are ugly, but sometimes necessary? Better to be well healed without surgery, but if you can't help it, better to have surgery, even 11-hour surgery. But never have 11-hour surgery if you can cut it down to 2. Goals. What should our goals and purpose and motivations be in getting deliverance? Most of us have presumed it was to rid ourselves of every demon and get filled instead with angels. Yes, that is right. In the Sunday school class, however, the point was made that if you are prayed for a spirit you never knew you had, then it's not bothering you. It isn't unless you're not discerning. If you have never yielded to a certain demon that had entered previously, he will just be there, but it's not hurting you. Well, that's true. If you never saw the effect of it, if he has no effect, then he hasn't hurt you. But no, he's not going to be around very long. And if he is hurting you subtly because you're not realizing it, then he has been hurting you, and you need to get rid of it, and that happens a lot. Well, I've been watching TV, and it hasn't hurt me none. I've been watching TV, and it hasn't affected me none, you know. But it has been affecting you. I can promise you it's been affecting you. Do you know how I know it's been affecting you? Because you've been yielding to it. Because you've been opening up to it. And it will always affect you. That's why you don't pray as much. That's why you're not going to church as much. That's why you're more carnal. That's why you want to do more fun things. That's why you want more adventure and sex and violence. That's why you are doing what you're doing. That's what's the problems in you. You cannot consistently watch, unless you're watching gospel programs or something like that. But if you're watching what Hollywood puts on, with rare exception, it is, and for any length of time, it is indeed affecting you. Now, it is true that if they show something on television that you hate, and you're hating it all the time it's on there, you're hating that thing, you hate it, it is not affecting you in a positive way. But if you hate it enough, you'll turn it off. And you can kid yourself. The very fact that you're leaving it on and willing to endure some areas you hate so much means you're not hitting it that bad. And it also means that there's some other areas that you don't maybe hate so much that you kind of like, but it's got a lot of ugly things in with it. But because you love the sex and the adventure and the romance, you watch it anyway, and therefore you're yielding to the package, and that other thing is beginning to wear away. Shock ability first, see? And then you're not so dead set against it. Then it isn't necessarily bad. And then you can get tricked and think it's not really hurting me when it is hurting you. It's having its effect on a long-term basis. It's just like growing up, you don't really realize how much you pick up from your environment. When the teacher says, data, take notes, this, this, and this, you learn that and say, oh, I learned Spanish, I learned this, you know how much you've learned. But when you're picking up kind of subtly, through osmosis, so to speak, you don't realize what you're picking up. And therefore, when you're watching things you ought not be, or is not balanced and godly, you are picking up things. And therefore, you can have spirits bothering you and not know they're bothering you. But when they get bad enough and they manifest somewhere in your life, you will then know it. Of course, you don't really want to wait that long. But most of us have, over and over and over again. Now, let me hasten on. They're quoting me. The best way of deliverance is still the old-fashioned way of just shutting them off. And that is true. There's nothing better than saying, yes, Lord, I hear your voice. You know, demon, get behind me. It stands written. That is still the preferred method. It's the one that Jesus Christ used. This seems to imply that it isn't necessary to evict demons or practice deliverance in this new way in the past couple of years, but that simply suppressing the overt activity, like we always used to do, is sufficient, in fact, preferable. No, not true at all. We need to totally break the hold, and therefore the quarters within, by a total commitment against them and all their activities. I'm not saying it's not necessary to evict demons. The way you evict them from staying in there is give them nothing to eat. Don't yield to him, and he will leave. Break his hold on you, and he will leave. That's the way to evict him. It is necessary to evict him. But we're not worrying about whether he's in my mind, because if a demon comes in my mind and gives me a bad dream or says something that I had nothing to do with, I count that as nothing. I do not condemn myself. I don't have to pray and ask for forgiveness. I don't have to feel bad about it. I don't have to shame myself. I don't have to worry about that during the day. I say, that was not me. It was the devil. I didn't invite him in. I don't agree with it. I don't equate with it. It means nothing to me. I'm not going to do anything with it. And I go on my way, totally unaffected. And that's what we do. And I'm not worried about what he's in. That doesn't mean anything. It's whether he's got a hold on you or not. It means something. God has allowed him in to tempt you. He's allowed him that, so we don't worry about that. We'd rather not have him, though. And you'll have him tempting you less and less as you give in to him less and less. Now, following this line of reasoning, it may be that some would conclude that exposure to immoral sex, violence, swearing, and so forth on TV or money or movies doesn't hurt them, because even if the demons do enter there, as long as they don't yield to them, to do those things themselves, the demons are ineffective and don't matter. I think I've already answered that. And I taught just the opposite, of course, so I couldn't obviously be meaning this. You may not do some of the things. You may not commit adultery, that the demon of adultery that you've been looking at a lot, but he's going to take you up to the far as he can. And you may not commit murder, but he'll take you as far as he can. See? And that's what the problem is. They could say, I've been doing this all my life, and it never hurt me because I've never yielded to it, so why not? See, but it has. Setups designed to lure the Christian in them spring later like a weak movement. Subtle influences the person may not even be aware they picked up, and is coloring their attitude and reactions, childhood impressions which don't vent until perhaps the person gets married and discovers they are frigid, curses passed down, and hearing heavy pressures of going into ministry at some future time, all seem to be situations which prove the need to get rid of all demons, and that's true, even latent, inactive ones, and that's true as far as anything that's living within the body they need to get rid of, but they will not stay there if you're not giving in to them. See, well, 20 years later, they probably left and came back at a more opportune season. And you probably deduced that they stayed there the whole time, because every so often, because they're back again, I had them when I was a kid. That doesn't mean they stayed there the whole time latent. That doesn't prove that at all. I can pretty much guarantee you that they're not going to stay latent for 20 years. They've got a job to do, and they got pressure on them, and they're going to do their job. Wherever they get activity is where they're going to be. And so don't assume they've been there for 20 years. They have gone someplace else and come back for a more opportune season as they did with Christ. So let's don't go yielding to sin and hurt and deliverance. When they tempt us, we'll command them to shut up and get out. You made the comparison that we are sometimes dull about forgetting a fighting communist as well as demons, unless they are fighting. But we know you don't think it is okay to load the community with communists as long as they are not publicly manifesting their doctrine at that time. And that is right. Still, communists in the land are doing no harm until they manifest. We don't want them in, though, but if they never manifest, they'll leave or something. If they're active communists, they're not going to stay there if they don't get a chance to manifest. And they're not hurting unless they manifest. And we should be free of all demons possible and all communists possible.
Yes.
Should not leave them around because they're not doing much. Because they're looking for opportunities, of course. The question could perhaps be asked, what good is deliverance? As long as I don't yield to demons, isn't that the point? That's the point of deliverance.
Right.
It's breaking the hold on you so you don't yield to the demon.
Yes.
And when the person says, along with yield to the demons, but you do yield to the demons. That's the point of deliverance. I'm almost done here. What am I really getting rid of since they come and go when they want to tempt me? You are breaking the hold on you that is on you because you've not been committed against them, so they'll quit coming back. That's what you're doing when you get deliverance. You're breaking the hold on your life. Besides, Don said, it is more to your credit to get rid of demons by setting yourself against them in the wood than to get other saints together and call for angels to war against the demons for me. So I'll be really spiritual and not go for deliverance. But that doesn't make you really spiritual to keep your demons and not go for deliverance and let them continue to work on you. Besides, it has nothing to do with spirit, you all. That has to do with your spirit yielding to the Lord. And, of course, that does have something to do with your spirit yielding to the devil, too. Deliverance breaks the hold on your life. And, therefore, if they have taken up residence someplace in the body, they leave. And if they come in just to tempt, they still start leaving you alone after a while because you won't give in to them. And if you don't succeed, it is more to your credit, it is better to just, you know, there's no reason to ask for angels to help you if you can just say no. We don't want to adopt an attitude that we will never say no to any sin without asking angels to come and help us. Asking angels is plan B. Plan A is you walk by the word of God and faith in God using your own commitment and your own soul and your own mind and your own spirit and walking according to the principles, and you say to the devil all along the way, get behind me. That is plan A. That is the higher way. That is what we're supposed to. Failing in this and being mowed down and overcome because we yield, we give in, we have not done as we suppose, we have not let the wood dwell richly in us, we're not walking by faith and praying always and all these other things we're supposed to be doing. Therefore, we find ourselves, no matter how much we preach, no matter how much you cry, no matter how much we try, no matter how much we beg, that demon has control. We can't seem to break his power. We're dying inside. And we say, oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this death-doomed body? And that's why we say we need angels, Lord, because we're not even doing it with a collection of saints. Help us from heaven or we won't make it. We say, Lord, help me. And the way he usually helps is dispatch angels. What you call for angels, not as what he kind of immaterial. If you say, Lord, help me, he'll say, yes, you go down and help him. See, but won't he go down? Well, look at his own beloved son. He sent an angel to strengthen him. God gently works through spirit beings to us. So how do I know if it's him or not? You don't. It doesn't make any difference. You got free. Now, I'm almost done here. One gal who had a marvelous deliverance, she was anxious to share with you, confided that she wouldn't think of telling you about it because she did have manifestations happen and wouldn't want you to think poorly of her spiritually because of it. We assured her you wouldn't reject her at all on this basis, but I'm not sure whether or not she'll feel free to come forth. Now, haven't I used many examples of manifestations, thinking no less of the person? After all, the lack of spirituality, love, unity, marriage problems, and so forth is negative. And it shows, and I've loved you, and I haven't judged you. And I won't think any less of you. You come and say, you know, I've had these, you You know, this demon came, he did this and this. I use those examples publicly sometimes to help teach the people. I don't think less. I am not in this business of trying to weigh you and your so forth. I will not put myself. I am determined to know nothing of you of Christ and Him crucified. I will not be deterred by anything you do or say. My love is totally, I'm committed to you, and God has done this in me, and I have no problem with it. I can do it with effectiveness. Whether you can do it or whether you can receive it from me or not, that's how I feel. And I have that ability in the Lord. I'm thankful for it. And I thank God for it. It makes me so free. It enables me to correct you. I could not correct you if I did not know, if I could not do that. If I felt like, you know, that you would all, I couldn't love you the same, I would soon be shut down. But I'd have no trouble. I've had people come up to me that's had some real kind of sloppy life, and I love them. They did some big thing, you know, some shameful thing, and I just grab them and hug them and love them. I don't hug the most spiritual down this way. I don't deal that way. That isn't how I feel. And some of you are backing up because maybe you've done some sin. Brother Peter, the Apostle Peter, did sins. Jesus used him and blessed him. In fact, he used him. If you listen to the Acts of the Apostles, up until the time of Paul, it was Peter whose name is over and over and over used. The one who denied him is the very one whose name is put up as the one who did the most miracles. It was a shadow of Peter that they put their bodies under, not everybody else. God loved that man. Yeah. He was a precious person. Yeah. He was caught in a vice. Yeah. I'm not blaming you. If you have had, if demons have said things out of your mouth, you may not have been responsible. And if you were responsible and didn't know it and didn't know how and didn't know you shouldn't, I'm not going to blame you for it. It's not going to affect my love for you or my estimation of you. My estimation of you is, my love for you is regardless. My estimation is based not on whether you've made mistakes, but on whether you love God, whether you're trying to walk with God, whether you're moving in, whether you're open. It isn't how much you know, how clever a mind you got. It's based rather on whether you get a heart for God. That's what my estimation is based on. God bless you. I hope this helps. We're closing this with a song. Oh, my wife has a couple of testimonies first she wants to give concerning this thing, and then we'll close with a song. God bless you. I love you. I hope nobody will take any offense at this or mistranslate my the effectiveness, the power, whatever I put into my message. My love is for love for you. I love you.
I would like to give four testimonies, one of which is mine, because I feel that these four testimonies are examples in the various areas that he has brought. But before I do so, I would like to say something as far as my experience is concerned, and this has to do with shouting out demons. And because Don has mentioned this morning about the manifestation of angels, over the years I have found that the Lord does have a particular angel of authority that comes to me. And when I'm dealing, especially in prayer and coming against demonic forces and the ministry of intercession, and this angel of authority comes, and when that angel of authority begins to speak through me, I find out that it is not in a weak, nilly-nilly passive voice, you know, but it comes forth, and sometimes it comes forth with loudness. And it reminds me of the fact that if I were in a situation where I walked into my house and there was a thief getting ready to go in and molest my little daughter, I could not kick him out if I had the power to do so. I could not kick him out in a very quiet way. I would come against him with everything in me, you know. And I find that this is the way that angel manifests itself through me. There's an authority there. There is sometimes it gets very vocal, you see, but it's not frantic. But rather it is the authority, but it comes forth with volume at times.
Righteous indignation.
Yes, and so I think that we want to be careful here and not say, well, if ever I get loud, then I'm, you know, but it's the panic that we don't want, or the franticness that we don't want. We want that authority there, and it comes forth sometimes with a lot of emotion, and it also comes forth with loudness. But now, that was not what I came up here to share specifically. I'd like to give these four testimonies. One is, and I'm going to mention only the names of two, myself, and the other one is David, our son. About a year and a half ago, Don and I both felt like that David was yielding to a demon of insecurity that he didn't know he had. Because it was like he couldn't take a nap without having a blanket on him. And even when it was real hot weather, I mean, he would just insist on that blanket. And Don mentioned to him, he said, David, I think that you have a demon of insecurity because you just can't seem to get by without this blanket. You almost panic if we don't put this blanket over you when you want to rest in the afternoon. And Don says, let's pray about that. And Dave says, no, there's no reason to pray about it. He said, I'll just block it out. He says, take the blanket off. I don't need the blanket, and that's it. And you know, that demon left. David had made that decision. This has been a year and a half ago now. It has been different since that time. He has not needed that blanket. He has not wanted that blanket when he didn't need it. Now that doesn't mean that he doesn't get be covered when it's chilly and he needs to be covered. But you see, he said, no, there's no prayer needed. I'm blocking that thing out and that's it. And he made the decision. And that demon's power was broken just like that. Another example I would like to give
is a
couple of people. These are recent deliverances. And these were deliverances in which these people did not really realize that they had these particular demons. But these demons began to manifest through them in a physical way, which had nothing to do with their own willpower, but it was in a physical way. And the ones that were present at the time covered them with so much love, with so much understanding, and just smothered them with love that one of them reported to me, you know, I have a closer bond with those ladies that were present and were there and helped me and came against those demons than I have ever had before. And that this has done something with our relationship and drawn us much closer together, even though she felt very close to these individuals before that time. But so I want to commend you for that. You see, you're doing the right things.
Judy Rowell has been a real blessing to me in this area. And I have had a few people for deliverance and a couple of things. And I had a problem with the spirit of fear, of misunderstanding, a fear of, you know, and it's more difficult. The higher position you occupy, the more difficult it is, you know. And because you need to be esteemed and so forth to a certain degree. And I had this spirit bother me, and Judy Rowell is such a balanced sweetheart. And she came in and let me know that she knew what I was, then I could go ahead and accept it. But if I'm thinking, if it's saying, you know, we got you ugly old nasty wicked wild demon and so forth, and that spirit on me might make me think she thinks that I am, you know, and it, see, she knew how to grease the skids before she operated, and before you drag the lumber across it or whatever. And we need to do that. We need help from each other. We need that love. This is not just a mechanical thing. We need to let them know that we're not blaming you. You're not, you see, we need to let them know we know what you are, my friend, see?
Yes.
And we're not requiring any perfection or anything else.
And nextly, I would like to report that a particular individual had a demon called out that had absolutely nothing to do with his life as far as the external was concerned, or what you would think. And this was a demon of alcohol. Now, this man had never touched alcohol in his whole life. But he related to me the fact that this demon, he could relate to it because this demon didn't need alcohol to put him in a stupor. Because this was a demon of alcohol that would manifest, that would put him in a stupor as if he were drunk. But he had never touched alcohol. See, but then he recognized, hey, this stupor thing, that's what this demon is. And he was able then to come against it and get rid of it, you see, because he recognized the symptoms even though he himself had never once touched alcohol. And he has been changed since that time. And now the other one was a testimony that I want to give you about myself. And I've had, over the years, four great big major deliverances. And I am just so thankful for every one of them. And every one of them have been just a little bit different. But I want to bring you the two most recent ones. The others have been way back. One when the church first got started, you see, and then back in an interim time, probably when we were about 5 years old as a church. But one happened. I was having an emotion that I didn't know how to identify. In fact, I wasn't even really, it was so subtle that I wasn't even aware that I was having it. And Scott Hartley came up to me after an elders meeting, and he said, "Barbara, I think that it's possible that you don't realize that that could be a demon of insecurity." And that, I mean, that was, you know, absolutely brand new news to me. Now when I look back, of course, you know. But you see, these demons are deceptive, and they especially deceive the person that they're working on, and that's why we need each other. But anyway, I didn't reject that. I couldn't identify with it at that point, but I accepted it, and I began then to watch that particular emotion that he was able to identify and something that I'd said that night, and I noticed that that was coming up again and again. It helped me. I was able to set my will against that then and not even receive that emotion. And I really cried out to the Lord. You know, I'm going to admit to you that I am weak. I am thankful that I know that I am weak. See, I am weak. I have to have Jesus. I can't do anything without Jesus. I need Jesus in every single part of my life. And without Jesus, I couldn't make it. I would fail. I have leaned on Jesus all of my life. And I don't know what I would do without Jesus. I know that I would just be able to do nothing without Jesus. I've got to have Jesus in every part. And I have to lean heavily upon Jesus.
He's our strength. That's what makes us strong.
I ran to Jesus with this. And do you know that the Lord Jesus delivered me, and I remember the difference that that made. And then this last week, the enemy, and it was a whole, that was a whole group of demons too. It wasn't just that one, but there was a whole group there that just left me. And I thank the Lord for that. And Friday afternoon, God gave me a mighty deliverance. And again, this was and I didn't know how to identify these demons. I knew that it was a group of demons because of the torment that I was going through. But I didn't know how to identify them. I didn't know what to call them. But again, I knew one thing. I could run to my Jesus. And I ran to Jesus, and I just cried out to the Lord, and I said, "Jesus, you've got to help me. You've got to do something. I've got to be delivered. I don't like this. I hate this tormenting thing that is going on. I've got to get delivered from this." And I asked the Lord to send me angels, and I began to speak out in tongues against that thing. And see, and I set my will against it, and I rebuked it, but I didn't get delivered at the time that I was praying. But I believe that the Lord was going to hear my prayer and answer my cry. And then on Friday afternoon, I wasn't even praying. All of a sudden, something happened, and I knew that those demons were gone. It was just like that. They were gone. They were out of my mind. The pressure that I was under was completely released from me. And I am just so thankful to be rid of those. I mean, it is so marvelously wonderful to be rid of these things. I mean, anything that you have to go through to get rid of them, it is worth it, especially when you're on the other side, you know, and you can see the difference. Now, I've had that insecurity demon and that whole package come back to tempt me, but there is such a difference in it now than when it was, you know, had a hold on me, as it were. As soon as I, that, temptation, that sin comes to my mind. Oh, no, I recognize that. No, that's it. And it's lost its power. It's like it can just come down, but it knows it has no power now. There's nothing there. I mean, it is so different. And I just prayed, you know, Friday, Lord, just don't let those others ever come back. I don't even want to be tempted with them anymore. Now, I don't know whether the Lord will see fit to answer that because he knows what's best for me. But I know one thing, if they do, I know where my safety is. I know I can run to Jesus. I know that I don't have to be ashamed to say I am weak, because every weakness that I have, it gives the Lord an opportunity to glorify himself in me. And after all, that's what my whole life is about. I just want Jesus to be glorified. That's all. And if I were strong, then he couldn't have the glory. But if I'm weak, then it allows me to let him be all in all. It allows me to let God be God. And I just want us to get over having to feel like that we have to act like we're strong to one another. We don't. But let Jesus be glorified in us, and let him be our strength. All glory be to his holy name.
Amen. While they're coming up to sing, let me say a couple of things. First is, there are all such things as strong Christians and weak Christians. A strong Christian is one who lets the Lord be his strength, and who's depending on the Lord and believing the Lord and shutting out the demons. The weak Christian is one who doesn't draw much from the Lord, and he doesn't stop the demonic activity very much. You see, there is such a thing as solical personal strength we develop in character. There is. There's a difference in unsaved people in that regard too. But it's not enough to make you a strong Christian without the Lord. So, Alice, when you see a Christian who is strong, stable, and has got boldness, and he's wise, and he's able to do things, know it's God in him. Know he's yielding to the Spirit. And if he walks clean, know he's stiff-arming the devil. And that he's allowing the Lord to help him. That is our strength and our weaknesses. And so we don't have to try to hold ourselves up as being strong. We're not strong. All of us are failures except for the Lord Jesus Christ. We are all too weak to carry to follow the commission he's given us. He never intended us to follow it. We cannot live like Christ. Only Christ can live like Christ in us. And therefore we yield to him. Therefore we all can do it. It's a matter of the will and walking with God. It isn't a matter of your individual strength. It's allowing him to be your strength. Now, one more thing. I'd like you all just to bow your head just a moment, if you will, please. I want a real quick vote from you. I'd like to know, just my own personal benefit, how many of you, when I preached last week, you had problems with the message, but now you don't? I could raise your hand. Okay, thank you. Now keep your head bowed a minute. How many had problems with the message last week and you still have some? You raise your hand. Okay, not very many, but some. Please write me a letter. Tell me what your problem is and why. Put your name to it, and I'll endeavor to individually contact you. I won't do it publicly, because I feel that we all kind of need it. Praise the Lord. How many are satisfied, completely satisfied with the lessons now, and you feel like you know what to do, and this is good? Good. I think this has helped us. Praise the Lord. Now, let me take one more thing. Really, somebody else should be saying this, and I'm not doing it for any feeling of personal aggrandizement. I don't feel anything in my spirit that wants to be magnified. I do not want to be magnified. I don't want to be. But I'm doing this for your own safety, if you allow me to. The fact that some of you had problems with the lesson and thought, boy, he's wrong in this. Or at least maybe some of you that had problems didn't think I was wrong, but you had problems for other reasons. But after I have now further explained it, if you have said, okay, now I think he knows what he's talking about, please remind yourself the next time I bring something, if I do, that you say, well, I don't know if I can buy that. Remember, I haven't
had the opportunity of maybe fully qualifying myself or answering questions you may have in your own mind that I didn't think of those questions you had, so I couldn't answer them. And so don't say, well, he's wrong. I don't agree with that. You only can say, I don't agree with it, but as far as I've interpreted him with what I now know. So therefore, I'm going to ask him, because maybe he can qualify himself then and give me something that will make me say, oh, I think he does know what he's doing about. Knows what he's talking about. And you need that trust in me, and you can't have it unless you give me opportunity to deal with you. And I preach because I want to meet your needs and have you understand things. And I know that I can help a lot of you that maybe I can on the first pass. I could have maybe in the second or the third pass. So even the second pass, if you're not satisfied, come back again. Give me an opportunity to work with you a little bit. Not that I got loads of time, but you're my, you know, you're my heart, you're my ministry, and we'll do what we can. God bless you.